Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 9, the Lord incarnates his Mohini Murti, text number 19. Asuranam sadadanam sarpanam eva duranayam madva jati rishasham natam vya bhajat achutaha. Asuranam, of the demons, sudadanam, giving of the nectar, sarpanam, of snakes, eva, like, duranayam, miscalculation, madva, thinking like that. Jati nri shamsanam, of those who are by nature very envious. Na nat tam the nectar, yabajat, deliver the share. Achutaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who never falls down. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. Purport. It is said, sarpa kura kala kura sarpat kura tara kalaha. It's quite a bit of kuras there. And karas. Easy verse to remember, there's only three different words. The snake is very crooked and envious, and so also is a person like a demon. Mantra sodi, mantra mantros shadi, vasa sarpa kala kena nivardyate. One can bring a snake under control with mantras, herbs, and drugs, but an envious and crooked person cannot be brought under control by any means. Considering this logic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it unwise to distribute nectar to the demons. Text 20. Supreme Personality of Godhead is Mohini Murti, the Master of the Universe, arranged separate lines of sitting places and seated the demigods and demons according to their positions. Taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, and thus cheated them of their share of the nectar. Then she administered the nectar to the demigods who were sitting at a distant place to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death. Purport. Mohini Murti, the Personality of Godhead, gave the demigods seats at a distance. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously, so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would only get a little of the nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The words Vanchayan Nupasanjarai indicates that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. Text 22. O king, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, whether just or unjust, Now to keep this promise, to show their equilibrium, to save themselves from fighting with a woman, they remain silent. Well, that's interesting. Big demons were afraid of fighting with a woman. The demons had developed affection for Mohini Murti and a kind faith in her. They were afraid of disturbing their relationship. Therefore, they showed respect and honor to her words and did not say anything that might disturb their friendship with her. Purport, the demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mohini Murti that although the demigods were served first, the demons were pacified merely by sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, "The demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar first. So let them have it first. Since you are not at all like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes and are so pleased with me. It is better for you to wait until the demigods drink." Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod, and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the moon and the sun. However, because of permanent animosity towards Rahu, understood the situation. This Rahu was detected. Purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of the demigods. Here one may ask why the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and sun, however, are always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of the demigods, the moon and sun immediately detected him. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead also became aware of him. This pastime is taking place not exactly on this planet. Well, I guess it's taking place on Bhumandala, so you could say it's this planet. The Bhumandala were situated, according to the Vedas, in a very small little place called part of Jambudweep, part of Bharat Varsha. I think there are, how many Varshas are there in Jambudweep? Eight? Seven varshas. Ten? Nine varshas. And we're in one of those varshas called Bharat Varsha, and a very small part, which is just a part of Bharat Varsha. And Jambudweep, as usual, it's nice to know we're in Slovenia, we're in a small country called Slovenia. But it's nice to know that also we're in a small universe. We're in the smallest universe. So small is not so bad. There are unlimited universes, practically. The number of universes is the number of mustard seeds you can put in a bag. If you ever saw a mustard seed, they're quite small. And therefore, in a big bag of mustard seeds, there are literally millions and millions and millions of mustard seeds. So we're in the smallest of all the different universes, and we happen to be not in this universe. Bhumandala is not a very small part of the universe. As a matter of fact, I was reading yesterday about the Lord Varaha. Lord Varaha was, does anyone know how big Lord Varaha expanded himself? Yeah, a little bit bigger than that. Close, but he was half the size of the universe. Now, why would you need an incarnation half the size of the universe to pick up a little ball called, if we think the earth is a globe, as a little ball? Why would Krishna have to advent himself as a varaha, half the size of the universe, to pick up a little ball. We wouldn't even know it was there. And then Prabhupada writes, one of the purports, that at the beginning, the earth was inundated and fell into the ocean, along with all the other planets, except for Janaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. All the other planets got put into the Garbhodak ocean. So why would this little tiny earth, with a conception of a little tiny earth, cause all the different planets to fall into the ocean? But Bhumandala is a huge, it's like, it goes out for, I think the universe is something like 3 trillion miles in diameter or something. Is it trillion? 4.3 trillion year is the diameter. And so, of course, Bhumandala goes until Aloka Mountain. Actually, I guess it's surrounded by Mandara Mountain, because that's where the sun rides on his chariot. And beyond that is Aloka Mountain, where there's only darkness, because the sun's not there. So I think that goes out to around half. So Bhumandala is not a little tiny globe called the Earth. Bhumandala includes Jambudweep, Plakshadweep, Samantadweep, etc. And each dwipa, well, Jambudweep goes out for a certain number of yojanas. I forget exactly how many yojanas. Maybe 120,000 yojanas. And then we have the ocean of salt water, which goes out for an equal number of yojanas. And then twice as much big as that is the next, I think it's Plakshadweep, is the next dwipa. And then they have an ocean of, I forget, this, maybe sugarcane juice. Eventually you get to the ocean of milk. So for us it's quite big. Of course, we're actually like little ants in this universe. But anyhow, we think ourselves to be quite big and important. We think the whole universe depends, we're the only living entities in the universe and everything depends upon us. We think the history of our killing each other is a very important thing for people to study, how we can kill each other. That's the history of Europe. All the little countries get overrun periodically, like Poland. One army comes and crushes it from the other side. And then another army comes and crushes it from the other side. And then another army comes and crushes it. It gets steamrolled all the time. And that's history. And you know what the only thing that you can learn from history? Do you know what the only thing you can learn from history? No, the only thing you learn from history is that people don't learn from history. Yeah, that's what happens. That's true. That's why punas charvita charvanana, just chewing the chewed. So here we have the conception. In other words, this churning of the ocean is in the ocean of milk, which is on Bhumandala, which is not just a little place in the universe. It's quite big. Bhumandala, and the ocean of milk is quite big. Otherwise, the demigods and the demons, they wouldn't find it very comfortable. They wouldn't have enough room to churn the ocean of milk. But it's a huge ocean of milk. And therefore, the description of korma in the ocean of milk, I think how many hundreds and thousands of yojanas across was korma. We have a picture of korma here, by the way. You see the demigods are very small in comparison to him. And Vasuki also looks like a little string or something. So korma was huge, and he was in the ocean of milk, and they're churning it. And we may imagine it's just some kind of like analogy, allegory, mythology. And therefore we think, oh, Bhagavatam is a very sweet book. read it to your children at night so they can fall asleep, hearing about the demigods and the demons turning an ocean of milk. And when they got tired, they just took a few sips and they got their energy back and went back to it. And at the end, they had a big pizza party with a lot of curd from the ocean of milk. There's also an ocean of curd, by the way. You don't really have to churn the ocean of milk. You can go to the ocean of curd. It's a little far away, but anyhow. They really have good curd in the ocean of curd. But it's not an allegory. And how do we know that? We can't find out by taking a bus tour to the ocean of milk, seeing all the statues of the demigods and demons churning it, or photographs on sale on the shore of the ocean of milk. No, we can't do that. We can't even get out of this little section of Bardvarsha. So how do we know it's real? We can know it's real because it's not only a mythology, but it also it's a science. It works. For instance, there is a Rahu in the universe, and there is a Ketu. Rahu, the head of what was the name of the demon? What was the name of the original demon? Bara something. It wasn't called Rahu and Ketu at the beginning. He was a demon who snuck in there. Maybe it doesn't say here. Must have a different name here in the verse. Swarbanu was the name of the demon. And he got his head cut off, but not by ordinarily, he got cut off by the Sudarsan Chakra. And he had drunk nectar. So he's a very special personality who's still alive, and it just so happens he's still in the universe. You can see him when there is an eclipse. When Rahu comes in front of the sun, I guess, and the moon, or the moon, or the sun and the moon, then you can actually see Rahu. Now, it's not considered particularly auspicious to see Rahu, just like if you're walking in the street and some criminal comes up and sees you, famous criminal who's famous for stealing and attacking people. So you've met a famous person, but it's not probably the most auspicious encounter. So Rahu's there, and if one studies astrology, one will find out that Rahu actually has its effect. People who are born in eclipses usually have a hard time in life. Unless there are other factors too. Plus, when Rahu's near the moon, people generally have quite a disturbed life. Or even near the sun. Rahu near the sun gives a big false ego, because Rahu tends to expand materialistically. Rahu is exactly what he is. He's a person who doesn't have a body. So what happens when you don't have a body? All you have is a big mouth. Does anyone know? Yeah, you can't be satisfied. Because it doesn't matter what you eat, you're still hungry. And therefore, Rahu is known to be insatiable. And in the chart, you can see where people are insatiable, especially if it's near the moon or even the sun. They become insatiable. What do they call that when someone's insatiable? And they're obsessive. They become obsessive in that area. And Ketu was the part of the body of Swarbanu, which was killed, but killed by the Sudarsan Chakra, and therefore it was spiritual. Whatever the Sudarsan Chakra touches is spiritual. Therefore, in the horoscope, Ketu shows where you actually more or less have become more perfect, spiritual, because perfection is spiritual, by the way. It's not getting a lot of money and fame and opportunities for sense gratification. Actually, perfection is when you become Krishna conscious, according to astrology. Therefore, people can't understand astrology very well, because sometimes it appears what's good is actually bad for a materialist, and what's very bad is actually very good for a spiritual. And therefore, the only way of actually understanding astrology properly is to see it from a spiritual point of view, because it's a spiritual science. Krishna didn't create the universe to give people an opportunity to make a lot of money. He gave it to give them an opportunity to go back to the spiritual world. And therefore, Rahu is typical in the horoscope. He's one of the prominent planets. There are many, many planets, but Rahu happens to be one of them. There are many, many planets that are possible, but Rahu's particularly influential, especially in Kali Yuga. Although Rahu has, according to his personality, has many different aspects, like Rahu is considered by Parasara Muni or to be the advancing army, for instance. And Ketu is considered to be the flag. Ketu actually means flag. Because wherever you put your flag, that's where you more or less consider that you're the controller of that particular place. You've already conquered that place. So Ketu is where you've actually learned from past lifetimes about something, and you're confident in that area because you've gotten some spirit, some insight into it, however big or small. But Rahu is where you kind of like venture outside the castle into the unknown to discover new things. So, of course, life is meant to discover spiritual things, and therefore it's important what kind of thing Rahu is interested in discovering, whether it's spiritual or material. In any case, if we examine the, you know, for instance, the moon, they say the moon is just some ball of dust. You've heard that? They've gone to the moon, they got there, and it was just a ball of dust. No atmosphere, nothing. Of course, we may wonder that how in the world, if there was no atmosphere, as I mentioned before, there's a picture of them putting the flag of America on the moon's surface and it waving. So what caused it to wave? The only possible explanation, according to the scientists, would be that when the pole went into the moon, the flag became so ecstatic it started to shiver. Since there's no atmosphere, there can't be any wind moving it, so it must have been an ecstasy. It was a patriotic flag, that's why they planted it on the moon. And of course, their favorite pictures are the astronauts' footprints on the moon to show that they were there. But of course, if there's no atmosphere, you can't have any water. If you don't have any water, then how do you have footprints? Could you make dough from flour without any water? Have you ever tried to make a chapati without any water? Ananta, have you ever made a chapati without adding water to the flour? Yogurt. Maybe the moon's part of the ocean of yogurt. It has no atmosphere, but it has a lot of yogurt. Yeah, it makes us, you know, you have to have faith in something. But the moon, according to the Bhagavad Gita, aham vaishnara budva praninam deham ashritya prana, no, that's probably not the right, I become the moon, I supply the juice of life to all vegetables. What verse is that? Aham vaishnara, that's So, what's the first word? Gama vishetrabhudani daryaham ojasa pushnami chostasi sarva samo buddhva rasatmikaha. I become the fire of digestion, and therefore I digest the five kinds of foodstuffs. I enter the moon, and therefore supply the juice of life to all vegetables. They've done experiments where they've shown that the moon, if you take you take plants and you don't give them any moonshine, then they don't really have very much taste. But if you subject them to moon, the light of the moon, then they're very tasteful. So how is it possible that something made out of dust is giving taste to vegetables? Did you ever make a sabji and then sprinkle dust over it to make sure it tasted better? Especially moon dust, says it. No, something that's giving juice and life to all vegetables on this planet, how could it just be made out of dust? And if it was just made out of dust, then how is it reflecting so much, supposedly reflecting so much light from the sun? If you go into a dusty room and shine a flashlight, does it reflect all the light? So there's so many contradictions. But we can see that in a horoscope, the moon represents emotions. If you can understand a person's emotional capacity and proclivities by seeing the moon in the horoscope. And that can be statistically judged. In other words, even if you don't know someone and you see their horoscope, you can judge their mentality if someone is expert enough. So how is it possible that the whole material universe is just all by accident? There's no rhyme or rhythm, and that this whole thing about the moon and the sun and Rahu, it's just all mythology. But it is in our own practical life, one can actually see the results of how the sun and moon associating with Rahu, what happens to them, and how there's an animosity between the demigods and the demons. Like the moon is supposed to be, in the horoscope, the moon is your emotions, your mentality, your thoughts. And when they're in contact with Rahu, who is a demon, they become sometimes very disturbed. It's very creative, materially speaking, because Rahu is full of creativity, how to lord it over and exploit the material world. So one becomes very qualified in some ways when Rahu is with the moon, of figuring out how to exploit the material world better than anyone else. And that's considered very auspicious nowadays. You think, well, that's not such a bad combination. They keep on criticizing Rahu, but it's really good because I can really get ahead in life in cheating everyone. I have so many good ideas how to cheat people and exploit them. And when Rahu is next to the sun, it's not so bad because one gets a huge false ego, and huge false egos attract people. I am God, you're my follower. But at least it shows that these things are not just imaginary, that they're just not, according to when we were born, it's all arbitrary. There's no relation between the planets and the sky. There's no, and they're different. They have no personalities, etc., etc. It's all just lumps of earth or fire, or whatever you may imagine it to be. They have no influence. But we see in practical life, the planets, they have an influence. Like for the moon, when there is a full moon, then the tides come in. They're very strong. And they influence the cycles in ladies. So we can't say it has no influence. It gives taste to the plants, to the vegetables. It influences even the whole oceans. It influences everyone's cycles, etc., etc. And in English, at least, there's a word called loony. It's known that during full moons, people become more disturbed and crazy. Then become loonies. Or we used to say, there used to be a group of people. Anyhow, so, therefore we celebrate Ekadasi. one of the reasons for Ekadasi is that it's the 11th day before the full and the waning and the new moon, because at that time the influence of the moon becomes greater, and therefore not only influences the huge bodies of water like the ocean, but it also influences our little body, which is mostly water, and therefore there's a tendency to be more disturbance during that time. So in order to eliminate some of that disturbance, we fast in order to prepare the body for the new moon and the full moon. So Krishna consciousness is not some kind of sentiment. It's actually a science. And this is not a mythological book. It's actually a reality. But for us, it may seem mythological because we're living in a dream. But as we wake up, then we can see how practical these books actually are. And even if we take them as mythology, still there's a practical side to them. Krishna is not just coming as Korma or the demigods and demons just so we can have an extra book to sell in the street. There's actually lessons to learn here. The question is how we take it, that's all. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. It seems quite auspicious that today we have Dhanvantari Trayodashi appearance day.
Today?
In India it was, they usually celebrate on the Tithi itself. So okay. Yesterday they celebrated, but anyway, so these two days.
Are we going to distribute nectar today?
I don't mind. Somebody.
We got to do a little churning, though. Okay.
Does he, like when this nectar is served, is he standing somewhere nearby? And does he have some abode in the universe where he's present these days?
I don't know. I have no idea what happened to Dhanvantari. I've never heard. He obviously, I don't know if he got discouraged after the demons snatched the nectar away from him, went off somewhere. But he's not mentioned again that I know of, at least not in the Bhagavatam. But he's an incarnation, so I don't think he disappeared so easily. There might be some more information somewhere about him. Anything else? Yes, we have two.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. As you were speaking about astrology, I was, and please correct me if I'm wrong here. My understanding is Srila Prabhupada didn't want devotees to get into astrology, saying that just depend on Krishna.
Really? Where did you get? So why did Krishna give astrology? Astrology comes from his incarnation, Parasara Muni. Why did Krishna have his astrological chart done? Why didn't he just depend on himself? why did Nilambar Chakravarti do Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's astrological chart also? Gargamuni did Krishna's, Nilambar Chakravarti did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. Why didn't they just depend on themselves? What do they need an astrologer for?
Well, in those days, astrologers were bona fide, they were highly qualified, and they had the knowledge, the wisdom to predict correctly. Nowadays, can we depend on astrologers, to give us correct predictions?
Now we get into another topic. Now you've come from depending on Krishna to astrology. So there's no contradiction between astrology and Krishna. Is a question of, even Prabhupada in his last days, he had many, many astrological charts done. Tamakrishnamurti once showed me a drawer full of them. And he was recommended to wear by one astrologer, Osha, a gem which they bought for Prabhupada for Saturn, because he was in the Saturn major period. So there's no real contradiction. In other words, Krishna has given astrology for the welfare of the universe, so we can understand how to do things properly. What's the proper time to plant grain, food, what's the proper time to do, to start a war. Every king had an astrologer. As far as who's qualified to do astrology, well, there's different, just like not everyone is qualified, for instance, to be an automobile mechanic. Some of them will cheat you, and some of them are actually qualified. So as Prabhupada writes in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, misuse of a great science doesn't make it useless.
Right.
So you have to find out someone who actually knows what they're doing. And there are people like that who actually like the science and they've dedicated their lives to it. They're doing it in a bona fide disciple succession. They actually have some knowledge. And what they do, it works.
Well, I've yet to meet someone like that, so maybe I haven't had that good fortune. But to me, it seems that devotees really get so deep into, oh, today is Thursday, today this is going to happen and that is going to happen, and they almost, you know, live by the predictions of the astrologer rather than strengthening their sadhana.
As Prabhupada wrote, misuse of a great science doesn't make it useless.
Useless. Okay, I got it. Thank you.
I mean, devotees get into all kinds of things. You know, they get. I remember we had something called K, Formula K. It was some kind of tonic or something someone made up, and they're doing multi-level marketing. And Formula K was the solution to all the devotees' problems. So everyone became, you know, involved in this multi-level marketing, drinking Formula K. And then after a while, it just disappeared because it was a fad. So people get into fads. The devotees are like that because they don't study Prabhupada's books. They don't practice sadhana bhakti so well. They're not engaged in preaching. Therefore, they have plenty of time to get into all these different things. And then they blame it. They blame astrology or Ayurveda or whatever because of their obsessive nature. And their lack of proper engagement. Then they blame the science as bad because the devotees don't utilize it properly.
So even if they think that it's not used properly, it can actually be detrimental.
That's right.
So even you go ahead.
Just like salt, Prabhupada said salt to taste.
Mm-hmm.
Salt is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any salt, it's tasteless.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put too much salt on it, then it's also, you can't eat it. So you should just put the right amount of salt in it, then it's beneficial. Helps digestion, gives taste, etc., etc.
So what guidelines would you suggest for devotees so that they are not misled?
Well, that's a big topic, I don't think.
Okay, thank you.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I wanted to ask something similar. I wanted to ask how many importance we should put to this Jyotish in our life, in our practice. Like,
depends who you are, what you're doing, and what you can use it for. It's like if you have any kind of instrument, how much importance do you have for it? Just like, for instance, we have this microphone. How much importance do we have for it? When it's time to use it, we use it. Otherwise, we don't all day long, you know, gather around the microphone.
Yeah.
Keep on, you know, polishing it and cleaning it. We use it when it's necessary, as much as necessary. It has its purpose, its proper time for use, and that's when you use it.
Thank you.
Anything else?
There is a question online. Valabi Napan, Hare Krishna Maharaj. First question, how to look at all the stories in Srimad Bhagavatam? Do they have different layers of understanding in thinking only about them as history or about lessons or philosophy behind them?
Well, they certainly have different layers. They don't have different layers. We're under different layers. Therefore, when we read them, we see them according to the layer we're under. But in the Bhagavatam, there are sometimes some analogies used, but they're indicated. like in the fourth canto, there's the conversation between King Pratibharishat and Narada Muni. Actually, it's King Parshat and Narada Muni. And Narada Muni is giving an allegorical description of a king and his experience in the material world, battling against different agents and etc. etc. But it's indicated by our acharyas that this is clearly an analogy, because Narada Muni couldn't tell King Parshat that you're killing animals and you're getting to get into trouble, so he used an analogy to explain to him what the problems of the material life that he was leading were. But other than that, you know, it's indicated whether we think that there is many different layers, as I said, there's a reality called the Srimad Bhagavatam in general, and we're on different layers and we see it in different ways. Of course, also in rasa, then there's different ways of seeing the same thing according to rasa. For instance, Mother Jasoda, when she sees Krishna, she sees him as a little baby. And Mother, that's not the way Srimati Radharani sees him. So there's something seen under Yogamaya according to rasa. Anything else?
It's the same question. Says.
Okay.
So then would you say, Maharaj, that not considering astrology could actually be detrimental to a devotee's life?
Sometimes, sure. If we're Prabhupada writes in the Gita Nagari, his essay on Gita Nagari, which I think he wrote in the 50s, he recommended that children at a certain age, they should have their astrological charts done, and then their Varna and Ashram should be more or less indicated so they can be trained properly.
Mm.
Otherwise, we're just flying blind.
Mm.
For instance, in the Madhva Sampradaya, and 800 years of using astrological, at least 800 years of using astrological calculations to determine who should become a sannyasi, they've only had one or two fall downs in 800 years of their sannyasis. And therefore, if you see a Madhva sannyasi, he has a very small dunder, because they usually take sannyas when they're like 8 years old. So they're quite expert at using Jyotish to determine who's qualified for sannyas. So it could be very useful. Previously, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is his father, and that's why Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda had Krishna's astrological chart and Balaram's astrological chart done, because it's quite useful.
Mm-hmm.
The kings would always have an astrologer to determine when to begin a battle or what the outcome of the battle would be, and they use it for all kinds of things, when to plant the crops, when to harvest the crops, what the weather is going to be like, etc., etc. So it was extensively utilized in the Vedic culture.
Mm-hmm. So supposing a drought was predicted, then the king could take precautions to store up the granaries and treasuries like that. I think even in the Bible there's that dream that some king got, and he asked, and he said 7 years.
Yeah.
I remember vaguely about it. Then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
If you know it's going to rain, you may not be able to stop the rain, but at least you can take an umbrella. You won't get wet. Okay, one more question.
Maharaj, one of the functions of astrology is that it helps us gain faith in a more subtle reality, ultimately in Krishna's arrangement, probably. Ne? Now my question is, this astrology proved useful in my case and in other cases, it suits its purpose, but why the structure of universe is made so that it helps us lose faith? At least in my case, I always struggle with faith when I see those descriptions.
Because we're attached to sense gratification. Therefore, Maya helps us remain attached to sense gratification, so we don't believe it's true, Because if it's true, then we'd have to give up sense gratification.
I hurt myself, but not by not having faith, because devotees don't like that you don't have faith. So you endanger your sense gratification so in ISKCON if you don't have faith in.
Lack of faith, real faith leads to problems, which encourage us to get real faith. If lack of faith led to wonderful things happening, then we'd actually get more and more faithless. But because lack of faith leads to problems, therefore is an impetus to give up our faithlessness and develop real faith. By the way, Prabhupada writes in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in terms of the description of Krishna and Balaram and their astrological chart, he said that Jyotish and Ayurveda should be taught in Dallas, in our schools, so that our children will grow up as qualified Brahmins, and they can go door to door and give some consultations on things that people really want to know about, namely their future and their health. And he probably writes there in another place, he said, every gentleman should know, should be familiar with Jyotish. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went one day to the marketplace and he asked, well, he was getting donations from everyone because he was a Brahmin. So he went to one, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says he went to one astrologer, learned astrologer, and he asked him who I was in my last lifetime. And the learned astrologer meditated and saw a boar, and he saw a tortoise, and he saw all kinds of things. He said, this is a really bad day. I can't really figure it out. I'm a little confused. Maybe you can come back tomorrow. So no, try to meditate a little harder. So he went back to meditating. He saw this man with an axe just slaughtering tens and thousands of people. He said, wow, this is really heavy. He saw this green man shooting arrows at everyone. And then he saw a coward boy. Now I understand who you are. In your last lifetime, you were the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're wrong. You're not meditating properly. He said, I know who I was in my last lifetime. My last lifetime, I was a cowherd boy. And because of my pious activities of herding cows, protecting the cows, in this lifetime, I've been born as a Brahmin. So even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used astrology. And even when there's so many things. He got married to all these 16,108 queens on auspicious timings. Let's get married, it's a good day, Sunday. No, he actually had learned astrologers determine which is the best time for them to get married. Yes? They're doing really good in the West. they're helping to prove astrology right. Anyhow, that's only one factor of the day you choose. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.